WFM. With Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to the superstar Jenny Green. Jenny's back tomorrow to kick off the weekend at 3 o'clock. It's Thursday, the 22nd of April, and this is Game On.
And coming up between now and 7 o'clock, we've got Women's Six Nations team news. Stephen Ferris is with us as the Rainbow Cup just about hangs on, and there's a new contract for this guy.
Ireland in position. This must be it. This must be it for Ronan O'Gara. Drop it, goal. Grand slam at stake.
Right, you beauty. Can we play that again, Damien?
Oh, God. Now you're getting demanding.
I'm joking.
Hang on.
Ireland in position.
Go on.
This must be it. This must be it for Ronan O'Gara. Drop it, goal. Grand slam at stake. He's getting
it. There's tears here.
Would you believe that?
Okay, enough. Plus, we've the Super League follow as it continues. Miguel Delaney has the latest as UEFA plot their punishment.
It's not the players' fault by any means. I think fans will be angry, but I think ultimately they know that it's not any of the Liverpool players or the Chelsea players or the Man United players making these decisions. The players have nothing to do with it, and it's the people higher up at the clubs that have let the fans down, really.
Our friend in the States, Jeff Shepherd, knows all about football franchises. He'll bring us our eye in America. We're live as well to the National Aquatic Centre for day 3 of the Ireland Swim Trials.
Game on 2FM. Yeah, Damien O'Mara and Donico Kellen bringing you right up to Tara Stewart at 7 o'clock. We'd love to hear from you by text on 51552, or you can tweet at GameOn2FM. Damien, how are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm slightly perplexed. It tells me the music is playing, but I can't hear the music.
That's a good
start to the program, Donica.
If you can't hear it, just move anyway. Yeah. It's like one of those, the silent discos.
Oh yeah, I'd say you'd be a man for them now, wouldn't you?
Oh yes, they're great crack.
Can I ask you a genuine question? Do you really get emotional thinking back to March 21st, 2009?
Not really. I just honestly can feel lactic acid in my legs. You know the burn of it all. Do you know what? Everyone goes on about that moment, Damien, but the moment, the bit I'll never forget was when we were behind the post after Stephen Jones knocked over the points to go ahead, and just how composed Ronan O'Gara was. Everyone knows the skill of his drop goal, but just, it's really hard to describe, but do you know the way there's some people love pressure moments, and he loved that it all came down to him. And he was just so composed. He was like, we need to win back the kickoff, and we were lucky there was an error that led to it. Stephen Jones kicked out with a pass back into his 22, so we got a foothold into it, and we were able to kind of get into a pattern for a drop goal. But do you know these people, like, how would you be if you were asked to take a penalty? Would you?
I'd give it a lash.
Would you?
To paraphrase your former head coach, never die wondering.
Seriously, like, I'd rather blame someone.
No. I'd give it a lash. And I'm a figure who lives his life largely in isolation. I'd survive without anyone ever wanting to talk to me again, or the infamy of being, there's your man. How many years was it? 60-odd years.
Yeah, it's about that, yeah.
And, yeah, it's funny because, like, we always, you know, Rory Best, who looked like he was in the pocket for the drop goal at one stage. Like, Rory's got great mileage out of, I was going to take it and I let Rog take it instead. Paddy Wallace has built an after-dinner speaking career on being the man who nearly gave away the Grand Slam because he conceded the penalty that Stephen Jones kicked short.
Yeah.
I could go on. Jordan Murphy, I think one of Jordan's great regrets in life is that was it his testimonial year at Leicester? He had the ball in the dead ball area that we had just won the Grand Slam with, and he booted it up into the second tier of the stand.
Can I tell you why he did? He was running around the in-goal area and he'd eight of us chasing him going, Geordie, knock it out. You know what I mean? Yeah. If he didn't put a boot in that, we were putting a boot on him.
Well, come here, he could have just tapped it out over the edge, taken the ball back, put it on eBay,
There you go.
Ching.
Yeah, I really do have to leave it go. But the main reason, and we're going to be chatting to Stephen Ferris about it, Ron O'Gara announced today, well, La Rochelle announced that Ron O'Gara is going to step up into that director of rugby role as of next year with a 3-year deal. So exciting times for him.
Can I ask you, well, obviously I can ask you a question. That's what we're here for. If I don't ask you a question, you're dereliction of duty. Is it inevitable that Ronan will coach Munster?
You know what? I don't know. I really don't know. I suppose the dream, and all of us want, you know, in Munster, you think that's where he'd come back to. But I wonder, you know, there's just from knowing him, he's ambitious. He'd want to coach at the highest level. And, you know, I think there's... I would love it, Damien, but I would say there's probably a bigger draw for him to coach at Irish at international level than there could be at Munster.
But then the question is, can you be the Ireland head coach without having come through the Irish system? Like, do you have to come home to Munster to eventually be the Irish head coach?
Yeah, well, it would be great if there was a kind of process within it. And if you look at that, I think if you were looking at an ex-Irish coach, which we're not at the moment, because thankfully I believe things are
let's not
good
because we've been accused of being a pylon.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think Leo Cullen's done an incredible job, and I think there has to be a reward for being within the system. And he's someone that I constantly say it. I feel he's undervalued. When I think it's right to throw the bouquets at the brilliant coaching team that he's supported himself with, because he's so confident in his own abilities that he can have people around him that challenge him. So yeah. I think that would be a great model if we can get players back. But the thing is, Damien, like, I know myself from coaches being involved in it, is such a fickle game. It really is. You know, right now at this moment, Ron O'Gara, they're joint top in the top 14. They're in the Champions, European Champions Cup. You know, it couldn't be going better. It's amazing how a few weeks things can change. So, but look, I'll be honest, I'm not surprised. It actually annoys me, it frustrates me that people are surprised he's a really good coach. Roger's been coaching us since we've been 18, you know.
Yeah, but the other thing about it as well is it's an interesting dynamic switch for him now, because John O'Gibbs, who is the director of rugby at La Rochelle, is by all accounts heading to Claremont. So Ronan has now signed a contract extension, but he's going to fill the top job. It's a significantly different challenge to be the director of rugby whilst also coaching the team than it is to have a director of rugby above you, where your primary focus is whatever number of sessions a week and having the lads solely ready for Saturday afternoon.
And it's a massive role, it really is, and it's all things rugby, it's contracts, it's, I'll never forget calling into Anthony Foley once, was looking to chat to him about rugby issues, and I remember went in, he was looking at training jerseys for 2 years' time, and like, I remember he was so frustrated by it because at the time both of them were green, and he was there, pick one of those shirts, will you?
Yeah, I had the exact same conversation with a coach, a very prominent coach at one stage, who told me, I passed comment on a jersey, and he said, yeah, originally we were going to put the logo in the centre of the chest, and then I said, let's, and I was thinking to myself, surely that doesn't land on, I would have thought there's some corporate fella somewhere in an office who goes, there's the prototype, you might run it by the players. I didn't think a head coach or a director of rugby was sitting in his office going, let's move the Adidas logo here or the Canterbury logo there, and let's move, like, the story that was I was told was, they were going to move the crest of the team off the chest into the centre to reduce chafing.
Wow.
Now, you would be more qualified to comment on the chafing nature of jerseys than I would be.
Nothing worse.
There's not Vaseline in the world.
Absolutely. Pseudocream solves everything. Don't worry about that too much.
There we go. Right, there's the clip for the promo. Dunnick O'Callaghan, Pseudocream solves
Madonna.
Everything.
Madonna loves a bit of Pseudocream.
For her breakfast in the morning.
That's true.
So we've got that. We've got the Irish women's team has been named to face Italy at Donnybrook Energy Park on Saturday afternoon. Can I ask you, last week, right, so much of the narrative was around there's a really, really good French team who are either professional or semi-professional coming to town, this two-tier nature. How much of a lift does that Irish squad need this week?
Yeah, it's really tough to bounce back, especially after, you're right, it was a good French team, but the one that'll annoy you, Damien, is your own errors. You know, the missed tackles, I think, were really high up.
20 penalties.
20 penalties. Like, we just always say it, if you give away over 8, you haven't got a chance, you know, and to be over double it. Now, I know an awful lot of it, when I watched it back, an awful lot of it is down to stress, you know what I mean? And that's what happens when you play amateurs against professional. Mm. Like the one with Emer Considine, that is a brilliant... When I watched it back, I was there, Emer's got to look after the ball a bit better in contact. But the French player does a brilliant job of lifting her elbow and reefing out the ball. Mm. And that's something you can practice when you're, you know what I mean, semi-pro and professional and doing it the whole time. But one thing I must say to him, I know it's great that we're chatting about a new Six Nations format and it isn't ideal, there's less games, but doing 3 internationals on the trot is really taxing on your body, and especially after last weekend's, which was a really physical game, you know, and you're coming into Italy this weekend. You know, I think it's going to be tougher than we're probably giving it an awful lot of credit to.
But then the counter-argument to that is, you look at the dynamic that you were involved in with the men's elite game, where you're managed, and like literally to the second, to the minute, you get the hook on the 62nd minute because you can't play more than 62 minutes this week, or whatever it is. Mm. They're in a situation where they have to try and replicate what will be the World Cup qualification schedule when that comes in a couple of weeks' time. And equally, if they want to be competitive at World Cups, that situation of a 6 or a 7 a day turnaround against very, very high calibre teams. So I completely understand that you'd say to yourself, maybe we should rotate somewhere along the way if we can. But at the same time, if you don't have that level of game week in, week out with the AIL or an interprovincial series, you do have to use the Six Nations as the model to replicate what you're going to face with games that will have as much, if not more, consequence.
Absolutely, and that's what we need, Damien. We need structure at every level of it. We need structures at our AIL level and underage level just for girls to play the game and enjoy it. But then we need a competitive interpro so that, you know, people can put their hand up for national level. And then when we get to national level, I know we're chatting about the WXV coming in. And watching this, I don't know, is it a Six Nations? But maybe it's, you know, when you look at, if you look at the 7 scene, you know, Portugal are really good. It might be different countries that we're not used to. I actually like that the women's game stands alone. I think, I've never watched as much of it because normally you're either involved in matches or you don't get to see it as much. Whereas I've got to see all 3 games over the last while because it stands alone. And I'd love if we, you know, my point is at every stage, or be it elite or just you know, competitive or even grassroots level, it all needs strengthening up. And I think, look, visibility is very important as well, and just being able to watch the games. And this one again is on RT2 at 12 o'clock, so it's good to be able to see it. But you know, it's going to be tough.
And if you're on the move, it's on RT Radio 1 Extra, so you can get that on the RT Radio Player app. Amy Lee, Murphy Crowe, Stacey Flood, Brittany Hogan all set to make their debuts. Grace Moore could come off the bench to make her debut as well. Murphy Crowe came off the bench to make her debut against Wales 2 weeks ago. Will play on the right wing. Emer Considine continues at full back. Bavin Parsons on the left wing. Senni Naupu and Eve Higgins retained at centre. Flood comes in at out half. She'll partner Catherine Dane. It's the only change Hogan's inclusion is the only change that Adam Griggs has made to the pack. So you've Lindsay Pete, Cliona Maloney and Linda Zugang packing down together. Aoife McDermott and Nicola Friday in the second row. Hogan comes in on the open side. Dorothy Wall continues at blind side. Captain Kira Griffin is at number 8. A massive omission, a lot of people thought, would be no Claire Malloy, which is an interesting one. Here is what Adam Griggs had to say today about Claire Malloy's omission and also the new players coming in.
No, Claire Malloy is not injured. So we had a conversation with Claire earlier on in the week just around, you know, some of the performances, and she's got things that she can still work on at the moment. And around those players coming into the starting side, I suppose, you know, over the last 6 months, we've talked about the depth of this side and building competition. And, you know, I wouldn't be true to my word if we weren't giving some of these other players a shot. And certainly when you look at Stacey, I think in the last 2 games she's come on and made a real difference for us. And in that 10 position, it's really important that throughout the week you take control and ownership of how the team is steered. And Hannah's had that opportunity the last couple of weeks. And this week we thought it was a good time to see how Stacey goes leading the team. So similar with Brittany, I think, you know, her 2 performances, she's been really good coming off the bench as well. And We see her as a bit of a hybrid that can cover that second row, but also probably her future is also as a back rower. She's very dynamic, good ball carrier, and really solid at the breakdown. So it's about giving these players an opportunity to start and obviously perform themselves.
That's Adam Griggs today. Claire Molloy won her 72nd cap last weekend. There was a suggestion before the game that she was injured and perhaps hadn't trained in the run-up to it, but Adam Griggs fairly defiant and open about it there. Like, that's a massive call, Donegal, to drop a player 72 caps with, you know, the experience and quality that Claire Molloy brings to that back row.
It is, but you've got to be true to the squad as well, and you can play lip service to, we've had 20 camps and we've competition for places, or as a coach you can actually show it, and I think that's what he's done there. I feel for Claire, and I feel for Hannah Tyrrell as well, because it is tough when you don't get to back up a performance. You lose a match like that, Damien, and the first thing you want to do is get back out there. But if he's to stay true to his word of bringing a bigger squad along to push us on for World Cup, this is something we have to do. We have to have competition for places. Look, two of them are quality. Hannah and Claire are quality. You know they're not just going to wave a white flag. The big thing is that they buy in for the squad and that they help prepare, and they're there and they're genuine about being good team players. I remember Gert Small would always pick guys up on it. You know, if someone was getting a goal, you have to ready and help the team at every opportunity. So hopefully we can have this weekend, because it's going to be tough. You know, Italy, looking at, I watched them back, you know, their last few games, they're again a physical team that are really going to put it up to us. And I think we make perceptions because we think of maybe the class and calibre of the men's game, but there definitely is a gulf when you look at France, England, but for us to finish best of the rest will be an achievement.
We've got a former teammate of yours standing by.
Very good, yes. We're absolutely delighted to be joined by Ulster, Ireland and Lions powerhouse Stephen Ferris. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, lads. Thanks for having me on, as always. The rugby just keeps on coming. We say that every week, but it's brilliant. The women's game's been really good. But just listening to you there, guys, chatting about the women's game and, you know, the Italian side. And everybody thinks about Italy, you know, they've been certainly underachieving in the men's Six Nations, but their underage teams have been coming along really well. The women's team, you know, had a brilliant win against Scotland as well. So, you know, there are good things happening in Italy, and, you know, the women's team will certainly have their work cut out this weekend.
Stephen, we might get you to give us a call on it. How do you think it'll go? You know, we know they're more physical than, you know, people are probably giving them credit for. How do you think Ireland will go in this big Six Nations match?
Yeah, I think everybody is hoping that the girls can put out a really strong performance. I think a lot of things need to click. There's a couple of new combinations, but you know the girls will be fighting very, very hard. And of course, I'm going to go with Ireland. They've lots of experience in there as well. So I think it's a really good test. I think it'll be a brilliant match. You know, both teams are pretty well suited to play each other, and I'm sure it's going to be tight. But of course, I've got to go with Ireland, Donegal.
Yeah, absolutely. Fez, we might look at the Rainbow Cup and it's not as colourful as we all had hoped, but it still is a quality competition. Where do you sit on this? Are you the view that at least they tried to make this happen, or do you think we jeopardise what could have been a more competitive Pro 14?
Yeah, Donegal, you know, it's something that, you know, when it was released a few months back, the season was cut short. You know, there was no semi-finals in the Pro 14. It was straight to a final. The likes of Ulster, you know, thought they were very hard done by because, you know, they're obviously more points than Munster in their conference, but didn't make a playoffs. And then for it all to come sort of crashing down again. I know the Rainbow Cup is kicking off. It's kicking off tomorrow night, actually. I think it's Stormers Sharks kicking off in the first game. That'll be live for people to watch. It is still called the Rainbow Cup, but the first three fixtures for the Irish sides are under pros. We all wanted to see, you know, the Stormers, the Blue, the Bulls, the Lions are, you know, coming over, playing Leinster, playing Munster, playing Ulster and Connacht, and seeing some really competitive matches, but I don't think we're going to see that. And unfortunately, Donegal, do you know what? It's nobody's fault here, because we're still in the midst of a pandemic. It's controlling everything. The Pro 14, the broadcasters' hands are tied behind their back at the minute, and they're trying to make things happen. But when travel restrictions are in place, vaccinations aren't accessible for everybody at the minute, especially the younger generation, it just makes things very, very difficult. And I don't think there is any one specific person that is to blame here. And, you know, I think all the fans out there have got to remember that, you know, everybody's trying very hard to put together competitions to suit around this pandemic that we're still very much in at the minute, hopefully on our way out of it. But, yeah, some exciting games over the next few weeks. And, you know, Leinster, Munster kicking off again this weekend. And it'll be interesting to see how that one goes, considering Leinster have got a huge game the following week against La Rochelle. So, yeah, the competition, Donegal, in general, it's not ideal. It's not the way we all wanted it to be. But hopefully over the next few months and come the start of next season, we all have a fresh slate to start from.
Faz, I'll never give out because they're competitive games for us. I always fancy an Interpro because there's always something on the line. You know, you're always thinking about guys that have aspirations of playing in green, and you know that not only small little things, just respect of the guys you're coming up against, you know, even for the likes of established players, you want to put in a big performance. Ulster obviously going really well in, you know, in Europe, but they have a big game against Ulster. And fantastic news today, Ian Henderson back in, but the one I was delighted to see was Will Addison. I'd nearly forgotten about him, Fez.
Yeah, nearly forgotten, me too. I think it was January 2020 was the last time that he played a competitive game. I don't know what your Maz is like, but I think that's, you know, coming approaching 15, 16 months that he has been out of the game. And it's crazy to think the amount of talent and everything that he does have. But from a personal point of view, I've been there. I've been out of the game for so long, and you just don't come back into it thinking you're fully fit and fresh and slip back into being that player that you were. And Will Addison will certainly know that. The coaches will certainly know that. He's going to have to get game time. And you just previously talked, Donegal, about, you know, opportunity for people. You know, it's about getting game time, getting regular games. Well, somebody like Will Addison, he is so thankful that these, you know, the Rainbow Cup has come around once again, because that provides an opportunity for him to get some more game time. He's off the bench this weekend. He might get a start next weekend. He can get feel his way back into wearing the number 13 jersey for Ulster, and who knows, the number 13 jersey for Ireland in the future. So, yeah, it's brilliant to see him back. Ian Henderson, obviously, also for Ulster. And the Interpros are always very, very competitive, as you know, and it's a real good test to test yourself against international opposition that you're fighting for. The one jersey, will that be, you know, Ulster, Munster, Leinster, Connacht? You know, there's only one Irish jersey that you can get, and the boys will certainly be out to prove a few points over the coming weeks.
So from an Ulster point of view, Steve, what will they target here? Are they going to try to keep two balls in the air and go after Europe and a Rainbow Cup, or do you think they have to solely put their focus onto Europe and trying their best there?
Donegal, I tell you what, Ulster are crying out for a trophy. They really are, and I think everybody believes that they have they have the pedigree to do it. You know, they have a team there that's functioning really well. Everybody thought, myself included, that when Marcel Coutier got injured, and then there was the reports of him going home, and now all of a sudden he's released an Instagram picture of himself. He's in South Africa and he's thanked Ulster and everything else. But the lads, you know, Nick Timoney and Jordy Murphy in the back row in particular have been brilliant. The combinations have been working well. You know, obviously Leicester Tigers away from home, they're going to have to do it the hard way the last couple of games. Harlequins away from home as well, it's been bloody tough. So yeah, I think the Ulster lads will be fully focused on trying to bring a Challenge Cup back to the home province here of Ulster. And yeah, they have a big game this weekend, but it's not as big as certainly as the Challenge Cup.
That game is live on 2FM tomorrow evening. We're here at the later time of 7:30. So if you tune in at 6 o'clock and think we're not here, they haven't gotten rid of us. We're just slightly later. So that's tomorrow night from 7:30. Kickoff is 8:15. Fez, the parallel then with Leinster on Saturday evening, they host Munster 7:35. That's live on RT Radio 1. You would imagine Ulster will go locked and loaded tomorrow in preparation for that next week. Likewise, Leinster, what better a competition could they get than Munster a week out from having to play La Rochelle in the European semis?
Yeah, although I'm not sure, Damien, that this competition, it's one that you want to get off to a good start in the Rainbow Cup. You want to keep things going. Obviously, Leo Cullen and the lads, they don't want to just roll over and say, look, guys, let's go, you know, get this game over and done with and make sure that we're fully loaded, ready to go. La Rochelle, here we come. I think they got to focus on doing the fundamentals right against Munster, making sure that they have a plan in place, get a few guys game time and boys feeling confident to go to La Rochelle, and then go over there and really turn it on like they did against Exeter. So, yeah, it's I wouldn't say call it a practice match by any stretch, but at the same time, it's the perfect opportunity for me. It's really good competition, a good side that you're going to face in Munster. It's always going to be huge physicality, and it's that's a brilliant just to tee up before you head away to France. But again, if I'm in the Leinster side at the minute, like, Munster's probably at the back of my mind, and all I'm thinking about is getting over to France and getting absolutely tore into Ronan O'Gara's side and hopefully lay down yet another marker to say that Leinster are you know, back to the height, the dizzy heights that they were a number of years ago in the European Cup.
Okay, Faiz, you might give us, I know it's always hard to call it, but you might predict the games for us. That, obviously, Damien mentioned we're covering the Connacht Ulster match tomorrow, but how do you see the Interpro series going? Who do you think will come out on top this weekend?
Yeah, of course, I'm going to go for Leinster to drive another nail. Donica, you probably wouldn't like to hear me say that, but yeah, I got to go for Leinster. I'm going to go for Ulster, of course. And yeah, next week it's going to be a couple of big games, but I think I'll wait until the team sheets are announced for those, Donica, before I put my neck on the line.
Absolutely. I should never have asked him, Damien.
No, sure, you know what answer you're going to get anyway.
Absolutely.
Fez, go back and enjoy the golf. I know you're a happier man than a lot of people down here that you've managed to get back out on course, so we'll...
Yeah.
He's playing like Leo and Maguire at the moment.
I've had a lads being in text me saying, you're so lucky up north, you've been able to get out on the golf courses and with all this good weather.
Yeah.
Hopefully you guys are able to get out there soon, but thanks very much. I'll try and get a game in over the weekend.
Oh, come on, no so doubt about it. Stephen Ferris, good to chat to you as always. Thanks for being with us. We've loads still to come on the programme. We're going to be chatting about the European Super League collapse. We're going to have our eye on America. And much more still to come. We're back in 2 minutes.
Dinners made easy with Green Farm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on. Football.
I'd obviously take you, Donica.
For takeout, you'd be very sorry.
Those promos don't do an awful lot for a man who's currently trying to shift a bit of timber. Anyway, back to the job we go. A couple of significant bits of news domestically today. Derry City announcing the departure of Declan Devine as their manager. Bottom of the table, 2 points from their opening six games of the season so far. So he returned to the club in 2019, having been in charge from 2012 to 2014 previously. Confusion in times today over the situation at Waterford FC. It was reported by one of the local newspapers this morning that Kevin Sheedy and Mike Newell had departed. The club then clarified with WLR, the local radio station, that they are still in their position. So we'll wait and see how that plays out, if at all, over the coming days. But we are going to focus once again on events, not even across the Irish Sea, but across Europe and the fallout from the Super League, the European Super League collapse, which took place earlier this week. And this is still going to play out. Delighted to say that Miguel Delaney, chief football writer with the London Independent, joins us. Miguel, how are you?
Thank you, Brad. Thanks, Brad. A little frazzled after, I think, the most intense week I've ever had in journalism.
Well, come here. I have to say, talk about coming at you quick. It was like an episode. Remember that old horrendous Sky Dream Team thing that was on years ago?
With Fletch and the lads.
That none of us none of us ever admitted we watched, but we could have told you all the storylines. When you got to the situation where Jose Mourinho was sacked from Spurs and it hardly registered the other day, before we get into developments today in terms of the penalties or lack thereof, which might apply, was this all a carefully staged ruse, Miguel? You look at how quickly the whole thing fell apart. Was this all part of some master plan by the clubs that will just come out, will rattle a few cages, it'll all fall apart relatively carefully, we go back to UEFA and we'll get what it is we really want in terms of Champions League reform?
No, I can see why people think that, but it's giving these people, and particularly people like Florentino Perez, far too much credit. And that is illustrated by one pretty significant long-term reality to this situation. These clubs and these officials have lost all their political power in football. That's not an exaggeration. Because what has happened basically for the last 30 years in European football and English football is that the threat of a Super League has been used to basically engineer, gerrymander, whatever you want to call it, but basically to restructure football so that every single decision taken has been to the benefit of the big clubs and so they accumulate more money, more influence, more authority. And like that can be seen to recent things like for example, the distribution of broadcasting revenue from overseas TV contracts. 3 years ago now, that was basically reconfigured in favour of the big clubs. Well, it was reconfigured in favour of the league position, which inevitably means the big clubs. So now, the Premier League's under 14, they're gonna basically go back and reassess all these deals. Same at European football level, with issues like these wild cards into the Champions League. They're probably going to be brought back. Because what's after happening now is that anytime they have a negotiation, you know, they've got no bargaining chip to play. They can't subtly hint that, you know, we can always go off and play our own league, because it's been emphatically illustrated to them in the short to medium term future. There's no market for that league. The project is dead and they've lost all clout. And that illustrates emphatically why this wasn't a stunt. Although, I mean, I can see why people believe that, because so much from this project was so haphazard and rushed. But again, I think it's just giving these people too much credit, because what they've displayed is a profound misunderstanding of how football works.
So, yeah, we've seen arrogance rather than intelligence then in recent days. I'm looking at latest reports that effectively there's no significant financial penalties are going to come into play. Realistically, the chances, I think, of the Premier League and the big leagues in Europe being able to sanction the clubs in terms of the competitions was going to be a difficult one to get across the line. So in many ways, it's like back in the day, your mother wouldn't give out to you. She'd give you the look and the shame would be punishment alone. Is that the situation we're in here?
There's a little bit of that, but also I think there's been a realisation at both your Premier League level and European level that this isn't really the clubs at fault. It's owners and a few executives who are at fault. And it's almost as if, like, given that, you know, the players, the managers, the staff could have been, you know, victims really of this situation as well. The view is that they don't want to punish those. It's seen as that the institutions are basically exploited by these individuals. And that's why, say, on Monday, when Sheffrin, the UEFA president, gave that press conference, which is one of the most remarkable I've ever seen, particularly in terms of something that usually as dry as football administration, when he starts calling, you know, people like Ed Woodward and Andrea Agnelli snakes and liars. If you notice through that, he specifically concentrated on individuals and didn't criticise the clubs, because he wanted to separate the clubs' institutions from the individuals. And the will at both domestic and international level now is to punish individuals and not the clubs.
Miguel, just on that, we've seen it before, though, with Wigan. You know, is that a bit of a cop-out? Should they, you know, we know it wasn't, you know, the players or the management and stuff like that, but it is, you know, it did jeopardise the whole sport. Do they have to kind of put a line in the sand, maybe just to put in instructions for something like this to happen again?
I suppose you think that, and I think it's very fair to look at the double standards of the Wigan situation, but I don't know, maybe it's just the magnitude of the situation that just feel calls for something different. And there is also the reality. I mean, and this was one of the motivating factors behind the Super League. The under 14, they do need the big six as well. Say, in England, say, they do have a huge commercial power. They are what drives the interest in the Premier League, say, or at the top level of the Champions League. So there is kind of, and I say, if you suddenly start dishing out, point deductions, It kind of does affect the attractiveness of the Premier League this season. Although maybe it'll enliven it, but I think they don't want to kind of affect the product, to use, you know, one of the horrible words I suppose that's been prevalent this week in that way. But yeah, I get what you're saying, and maybe there is an element of different standards there.
Just on it as well, Miguel, what about, you know, it looks like ownership is coming into question now, and we saw today Manchester United supporters blocking off the entrance to the training grounds. Is this something we're going to see more of, supporters wanting to take back their clubs?
Oh yeah, well, I think that's precisely why what initially had been a very depressing story has become quite an uplifting one, because as you can see from the scenes on Tuesday night, I was at Stamford Bridge beside thousands of fans that they found out they'd withdrawn. And it was a great display of communal power and kind of unity. And this week has illustrated the power that fans still have in that regard. In fact, it was quite like some of the scenes we've seen in German football. So I think that's one side of it, that there'll be fans will be emboldened in terms of protesting. But the other side of it is, with this Super League project dead for the short medium term future, if not the long term future, a lot of these owners, and particularly the US owners in charge of Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, something like the Super League or a big transformation in sports rights, like somewhere to be able to individually sell rights to their team. These have always been seen long-term ambitions on the horizon that would basically change the scope for what they can value the club at. So, I mean, the example that was given to me yesterday by someone involved was, say, a lot of these owners, they're looking at the MLS. And MLS is a closed shop. And that means that in terms of the revenues the US clubs have, they can be valued at 8 to 10 times the revenues. Where at the moment, Premier League clubs are operating at 3 to 4 times their revenue. So what they wanted to do by introducing this closed shop was basically lift that to kind of 5 or 6 times the revenues at the stroke of a pen. And that's now been denied. And so they might, as put to me yesterday, a lot of these owners might realise there actually isn't that much more scope for financial growth in European football. And it could cause a few of them to cash out. We could have two sides there. On one side, fan empowerment. On the other side, a lot of these owners realizing that there may not be the opportunity to make the money out of football that they thought there was.
I'm reading, there's a statement while we're chatting has been released by Barcelona. Now, I don't know if it's lost in translation from Spanish to English or if it's just intended to confuse, but the general gist is, you know, we joined the Super League as a matter of immediate urgency because of the reforms they feel that are needed. They were always going to put it to the membership before any final decision was made. But basically, like, they're sticking to their guns that a serious conversation around the reform of football needs to take place, and it will act at all times with due prudence and asks for the utmost understanding, respect, and most of all patience amongst FC Barcelona supporters and public opinion in general. So they seem to be holding fast to the desire for change, whilst saying, sure, we would have run it by a referendum anyway, so we wouldn't have done it on our own. Just, you mentioned there the relationship with the owners. Like I'm now a legacy fan of Liverpool, because I think that's how they were described during the week, because I've been supporting them for years rather than coming onto the bandwagon now. So as a legacy supporter of Liverpool, like, Gillette and Hicks a couple of years ago were welcomed like the Messiah because everyone deemed that they'd be better than David Moores and the Littlewoods, you know, the legacy that had been there before. Then FSG forced them out and John W. Henry and his wife were the new Messiahs. This week, Liverpool fans want FSG gone. United fans long want the Glazers gone. Chelsea fans, I think, realised that the club didn't really have anything before Abramovich came in, so they're not going to push against him. But you do have to be careful of what you wish for, Miguel, because for all that Liverpool fans might be disappointed with FSG this week, like, they didn't arrive in out of an act of benevolence a couple of years ago to turn them into Premier League winners and Champions League winners without it trying to turn a book as they have done everywhere else. So if FSG were to be forced out the door tomorrow morning, Liverpool fans might regret that very swiftly.
But they might only regret it if it's in the existing football world. We're talking about a new football world, because there now is a political will in England to bring in some sort of German model or fan ownership. And I think that would be infinitely better, especially for a club like Liverpool, because they have such immense financial potential. I mean, FSG didn't do anything that revolutionary with Liverpool. Liverpool was just badly run for years.
Yeah, exactly.
They just needed someone to come in with a halfway good plan that could actually maximise what the club is. So, I mean, let's not give them too much credit there. They're just basically, they're well run. But I mean, and a problem there with all this, as you refer to, it's a financial calculation. Ultimately, as we've seen through what is it now, 5 or 6 massive initiatives that have turned into fiascos under FSG, where they've ultimately had to apologise, their primary objective with Liverpool is financial growth. It's perpetual financial growth because of what their venture capital. Now, that for financial perpetual growth relies on guarantee of income, which is kind of almost impossible in what Western European football culture is, which is based on uncertainty, promotion, relegation, and the lack of guarantees. And so there will always be contradiction there, always be a contradiction about what a club is. And again, it's why it would be so much better if there was some sort of fan model, especially for a club like Liverpool because of their size. But there's also one thing I want to address that you mentioned, the Barcelona statement. I find it absolutely laughable that Barcelona and Florentino Perez in Madrid are the ones talking about, well, we have to address the structure of football. They're the cause of the problem. Like, the two clubs, or rather, the executives have been in charge of clubs for so long. They're the cause of the problems in football. Mm. The problems in football aren't that Barcelona are not making enough money. It's basically they're making too much money that no one can compete with them.
Miguel,
what's actually happened is they've been mismanaged.
But I was going to say, but before we let you go, because we're a little bit tight on time, if you looked at any regular industry, Real Madrid and Barcelona, Barcelona in particular, would have been wound up years ago because the balance sheet is in such a state.
Yeah, but again, but this points to the issue that football isn't a regular industry.
Exactly.
And it's a mistake people look at it as purely business. It never is. They're social institutions and it's a sport.
We'll wait and see how it all plays out until the next bit of drama. I hope you have a couple of days lined up at some stage because you need them at this stage.
Yeah.
You need to come back here to the League of Ireland. It's much calmer, you know. Anyway, come here, Miguel. Wish you well. It's always good to talk to you. Thanks as always.
Cheers.
Good. I'm after getting a text off a fella criticising me that I'm actually a legacy fan of Bose.
Oh, there you go.
And I'm tempted to text him back and go, Jesus, when you were playing for Bose, I was 10 years of age. So that shows you how long it is I've been supporting Bose. So, you know.
Is legacy the equivalent of being old school?
Yeah, exactly. Apparently do you support an English football team?
Yeah, Liverpool, yeah.
So, like, because you and I supported Liverpool back in, say, the mid-80s, or, like, we're fans who came to it, didn't come to it in recent years, apparently we're legacy fans. Okay. So, like, they're not interested in you and me. They're interested in...
I had no choice, Damien. I had three older brothers that supported Liverpool, and I supported Wimbledon for an FA Cup final, and Wimbledon won, and I bawled my eyes out.
Yeah. I'll give you the example where not where I live now, but in my previous house, there was a young lad who lived on the road, and I used to see him in a Liverpool jersey with Torres on the back, and then Torres went to Chelsea, and this is no word of a lie, about 6 weeks later the young lad was out in the green in a Chelsea jersey with Torres on the back. And that's the type of fan that the clubs are after now, the fella who it's like, I don't care that you supported United last week, spend 200 quid in my club shop now and you're my mate.
My brother wouldn't leave my nephew support Man City when all his buddies were doing it. No chance. And he was delighted last year when Liverpool actually
won. Anyway, legacy fans. That's what it's. So I was at your Heineken Cup final in 2008. Does that make me a legacy reporter?
There you go. Yeah. Old school. I like old school as opposed to legacy.
Right, we're going to go to the States after a break. Stay with us.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
There's a man open left. Game on. I am America.
Okay, Damien, time to get across the Atlantic and join our great teammate, Jeff Shepherd. Shep, how are you?
I'm doing great, especially now that I found out that I'm the legacy American reporter on this show.
Well, you most certainly are, to fill us in on all the views. Shep, there's been a lot going on over here, and it brings the cross between sport and business, and no one views it better than in America, where this model runs really well. Have you been surprised with the reaction of the Super League?
It's been interesting. I mean, the announcement was made on Sunday, and it broke down by Tuesday. I mean, I've had marriages that didn't last that long, you know?
I've had Zoom meetings that lasted longer.
Right. So and this kind of gets to the point that you guys were really just kind of discussing, which is, what was the point of this? Like, why was there this, like, there's literally nothing wrong with the game of you know what Americans call soccer in Europe. I mean, there are successful teams in England and Spain and Germany and Italy and France, and you know all these players get elevated and these owners are all incredibly wealthy. I mean, I'm not one of these people that's like, oh, you know, it's the world's game and everybody should get paid with lollipops and rainbows and you know, like, I mean, I get it, you know, it's a business. I'm fine with that, but like, it just seems to me that it was just completely motivated by money. And I'm not trying to sound like a hippie, but like, I don't get why was there this sudden urge to do this?
But Chip, on that, when you look at the NFL and the NBA models, of course, there is money in the game and at the top end, but there's also the security of knowing that you'll always be there and never relegated. And when you look at some of these clubs, like the Italians and the Spanish, they're in real trouble at the moment.
Yeah, and I understand that. And you're right. I mean, you know, but I mean, that's the thing about, you know, there is delineation in American sports when it comes to major, and I don't just mean baseball here, when you talk about the major leagues and the minor leagues. I mean, you have, you know, you have professional football in the NFL, and then you've had these other leagues that have tried it, and it's just never taken on, whether it's the XFL or the AFL years, you know. And the NBA has got the G League. Well, that's a league that feeds players into the NBA. And Major League Baseball has the minor league system. It's a league that feeds players into Major League Baseball. They're not on the same path, and they're not supposed to be considered, you know, because you have younger players, or you don't have players that are as talented as you would have in the major league team. So there's that delineation there. The thing that I found interesting over here in the States was the talk of how it was, you know, it was almost the super teams, and again, they're calling it the Super League, you know, breaking off to go form their own league. There has been a lot of discussion about this in recent years, kind of ramping up, and I don't know how serious it has been, but I think it's going to start getting more serious with regards to college sports and the NCAA. You know, Donners, we talked a week or two ago about how the players are about to be able to start making money off their name, image, and likeness. You know, where if the school's making money off of them, you know, they're going to be able to start getting a cut of that. Well, as you have, you know, maybe you have fewer and fewer amateur athletes and teams that are competing on this, you know, not-profit level. Do some of the bigger ones, if the NCAA loses some of its power and luster, do some of these bigger ones decide, hey, you know what? We're Alabama and Georgia and Clemson and USC and Notre Dame and Penn State and Ohio State and LSU and Nebraska. We're going to go form our own big league because we've got money and we don't really need the NCAA. We've got stadiums. We can offer scholarships. What are we really doing here? And I think you could do that in college football, but once you move beyond that, then you're getting into – to make the comparison, some of these smaller teams, when you're talking about, you know, the Olympic sports and women's sports that don't generate a lot of money, but they're there for the competition.
But it's like, you know, it's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. There's always, whatever you have, you can always have more. Or I like to talk about the Bruce Springsteen effect. The poor man wants to be rich, the rich man wants to be king, and the king ain't satisfied till he's ruled everything. So these guys just want...
Rock and roll,
more,
David.
More cash. Do you know, I put that in my thesis. I quoted Bruce Springsteen in my thesis about podcasting. So that exact quote. There you go. Badlands got me at first. Anyway, we better move on because we don't have an awful lot of time. You talked there about you know, amateur college athletes having the ability to earn their cash. And we have spoken on so many occasions about the pressure that's on certain American athletes to use their voice, or this perception that they carry this significant social influence. One man who has found that perhaps to his cost in recent days back to Liverpool because he's a shareholder is LeBron.
Yeah, so look, I know lots of times, and I don't want to sound like a pig-headed American here, but I know lots of times, you know, news in America does make its way around the world. So just briefly, you know, there was a trial that came to a conclusion this week in Minneapolis about a police officer who was convicted of killing George Floyd. And, you know, justice was served. It was the absolute, you know, right decision. Everybody was, you know, excited that the system worked. And I think some felt relief. And, you know, others know that there's more to fight. And there is. But again, as we've spoken about before, the players, especially in this last year or two, I mean, and that spurred a lot of this kind of player movement and player action with, especially with the NBA, if you remember over the summer with, you know, putting, you know, I Can't Breathe and All Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, you know, whatever it is, whatever your message was, equality on your jersey. Well, at the same time that all this was going on, there happened to be another incident in Ohio, and you know, people all over were reacting without having any of the facts. And the facts were, just real quick, is another police officer shot a girl. Well, the girl had a knife, and she was potentially about to stab someone. And so it's kind of like, what's the line here? Like, what are we supposed to do? And LeBron tweeted out something about basically that the police officer was going to be the next one to be held accountable in Ohio, and it just was poorly timed and ill-informed, and he took the tweet down and he talked about how everybody needs to have more information. And I think that's a very good lesson for everybody. I mean, look, not everyone has the platform that LeBron James has, but if you don't have all the information, why weigh in on a topic, especially one as heated as this in the times that we're living in right now? And so he has been given a lot of leeway when it comes to, you know, his voice and his opinion, but it came back on him pretty hard this week with regards to this topic.
Absolutely. We want to hear from our athletes, but like you said, Chip, it has to be measured. Thanks a million for joining us. We'll catch up next week. Enjoy your sport over the weekend. We're going to take a quick break and we're back to the NEC, to the Irish Swim Trials.
With Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Almost time for us to go. Before we do, we're going to check in. The Irish National Team Trials ongoing at the National Aquatic Centre. John Kenny is there for us. John, another day of some really impressive performances, particularly by some of Ireland's younger swimmers, and plenty to look forward to.
Yeah, Shane Ryan, Dara Green, Daniel Whiffen and Mona McSherry, still the four Irish swimmers who qualified for the Olympic Games. We got two Irish records today. A surprise in the 400 metres freestyle as Finn McKeever, the 21-year-old, broke the Irish record set 2 years ago by Jack McMillan in 3:52.83, and then the race of the night, Danielle Hill took back her Irish record 55.33, which was nicked from her yesterday by one of her best mates, Victoria Caddison, and a great race to the finish. Nick O'Hare is with me, the Olympian from 1996. That was a great race between Hill and Caddison.
Yeah, very, very good race. Very contrasting styles. Danielle Hill, she had the disappointment of missing the 100-metre backstroke qualifying time by 9/100ths of a second yesterday. She took it easy in the heats, and her technique was absolutely beautiful. She was extremely, extremely controlled, got all the technical aspects very, very well put together, and she managed to nick that time. Now, the significant thing about that time, there are two significant things. One, we're sending four ladies to Budapest in 3 weeks' time to try to qualify an Olympic relay. That would be our first Olympic relay since 1972. The other thing is that she's after going 0.9 of a second faster than she's ever gone in the 100-metre freestyle. Now, Hill is also the Irish record on the 50-metre freestyle. It's only 0.48 of a second away. So based on a 0.9 improvement, she's going to get very, very close to that time tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, so we've got four more sessions, Damien. Tomorrow we start at 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join us and watch those live, you can see them on the RTE player at 10:05.
Brilliant, John. Thanks so much, Nick. Okay, Damien, that's all we have time for. A massive thank you to Ronan and Jarlow.